Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling, Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2001 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com/dialect. This week we speak to Lisa Furness from our very own People's Republic of Stokes Croft, literally in the same building here in Jamaica Street. She's starting a Thursday evening series of documentary films beginning on Thursday the 28th of June. Also, the mainstream TV won't, but Bristol will. The conversation, the meeting, the seminar is Jeremy Corbyn, Anti-Semitism and Justice for Palestine. This is really looking at whether the Israel lobby is behind the anti-Semitism in the Labour Party campaign. This meeting is taking place on Monday, the 25th of June. The mainstream TV won't, but Bristol will. It's a meeting, a seminar, a conference called Jeremy Corbyn, Anti-Semitism and Justice for Palestine, looking at the links between the Israel-Palestine conflict and the accusations of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, pulling it all apart at the Ark on Broad Street, that's the Palestine Museum, on Monday the 25th of June. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio, one word, .co.uk and based at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft on Jamaica Street. I'll give you our contact details at the end of the show.
My name's Lisa Furness. I've been working with the People's Republic for about a year now. I came in as a kind of general all-round assistant, and I'd say by this point I'm pretty much the events manager, workshops and education manager, and I'm just about to start running the venue as well.
Crikey, sounds like you've got a lot on your plate. Workshops, what sort of workshops have you been doing?
So up until now we've been facilitating a couple of workshops that other organisations have put together and wanted us to run. We've been working with Creative Youth Network and the Atlantic College to provide activities. However, one of the things that I was asked to do was start to put together programmes that PRSC could run themselves in-house.
The Atlantic College? That does sound a little bit distant from here.
It's an international college which has been, I believe the students came to us from Wales, and is specifically an educational organisation trying to produce activists and citizens and politically engaged people who have the tools and the wherewithal to change.
But Creative Youth Network, I have heard of. They're kind of based right in where the old fire station used to be, and they're quite active here. In fact, they seem to have taken over quite a lot of what used to be the old youth service of the city.
Yeah, well, you know, the way that the private tendering system works in the madness of the world that we live in at the moment, Creative Youth Network have just been given 100% of the funds for Bristol City Council's youth services. So I believe they are the only genuinely funded option available at the moment that doesn't have another stream of income.
Yeah, because the thing is, for a lot of young people nowadays, a lot of the old traditional youth centres have been closed down. I wonder if you come across this, you know, where it's actually not very easy to get jobs for the young people. There's a sort of disaffected youth. In fact, in a way, it's almost normal to be disaffected because you find it difficult to kind of get away from your parents. What are you able to do through your workshops and the work you're doing here at People's Republic of Stokes Croft for young people?
So I would say that actually you're right. This is a very, very disempowering time to be a young person. There's a sense of pessimism about the future that is felt across the generations. The strong anticipation that the younger you are, the more poor you're likely to be as you get older, the less chance you're going to have of a pension, of a house, of any of the opportunities that were considered almost automatic 40 years ago, have been eroded. And combined with that, as you say, there's been a cut in social services and youth services and all of these things. So what we at PRSC are interested in doing in the summer, we're kind of gearing up gently. So we want to give people a chance to let their hair down and enjoy themselves. We'll be running creative workshops, graffiti, street photography, screen printing, giving people ways that they can express themselves. And also looking at, I mean, we're explicitly interested in street art in this organisation as a way of giving voice to those that don't have voice.
That's right, isn't it? I mean, graffiti almost seems to come, or the urge to do graffiti seems to come when there's a society where people can't express themselves any other way.
Yeah, exactly. And when people feel disempowered and marginalised within their environment, one of the most empowering acts can be to actually physically make your own mark on your environment.
You know what I'm going to say? Get it out of your system.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you're doing some films as well, aren't you, over the next few weeks. Can you just take us through those? The first one, In Our Hands, on Thursday the 28th of June. Well, okay, so what's that about, and when's it on?
So first of all, I'll say that the reason why we started to run documentaries and why I've put this programme together is partly because we just want to get people into our venue. I think there's not that much awareness of the fact that we have this wonderful community venue available for arts and activities and workshops, and this seemed like a good way of giving people a chance to come down and enjoy the space. And also, I wanted to find documentaries that were also empowering and inspirational. So I've deliberately avoided going to anything that just gives you a really bleak message about horrible things that are happening and then leaves you with that sense of horrified helplessness that I think is too much of a constant of people's lives at the moment. So explicitly, all of these movies are going to basically raise an international issue and an issue that people have been struggling with, and then demonstrate clear ways that people have resolved them, ways that people have taken power into their own hands, and that collective action can change the realities that we live in. So, as you say, In Our Hands is coming up on the 28th of June. All of them are going to be running on a Thursday and starting at 7 o'clock in the evening. In Our Hands is basically about seed power, about where we get our seeds from, about growing food, about where we get our food from, about who controls the food industry.
Isn't Bill Gates collecting seeds and putting them in cold storage up in the Arctic?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, you know, there are a huge amount of laws around who is allowed to buy or sell seeds, where you're allowed to pass seeds to. It is one of the most controlled substances around, strangely. And there is a growing monopoly from a couple of the really big food industries.
Now, I'm thinking, I may be wrong here, but I think last year Cargill and Monsanto merged.
Yeah.
Have I got the names right? Certainly two of the biggest seed companies in the world who were supposed to be competing with each other suddenly just decided, well, let's stop competing, because if we merge, we can then charge what we want.
Yeah, I believe that Monsanto now controls over 60% of all of the seed exchanges in the world, and this is a terrifying idea, and it really raises some basic fundamental questions about who has the right to own and control the basics, the essentials that all of us need to live.
Well, there's also that whole Terminator technology, isn't there, where the idea is that they give you a seed. Maybe if you wanted to grow a tomato, you've got to buy a seed from them, and you all only ever grow one tomato plant. Yeah. You can't use that plant. It won't be fertile to grow other plants.
Exactly.
This control over what we desperately need to live is pretty scary, actually. It's like dystopian.
It's like a biological version of planned obsolescence, where basically, you have to, each time you go back to the original suppliers to buy a single seed, as you say, they come unfertilized. And this, the ability to grow our own food and to exchange and share our own food has been rapidly eroded over the course of the last 50
years. Okay, so after that, how do you cheer people up at the end of that? That's quite bleak,
isn't it? In Our Hands looks at the micro farming programs that are running in the UK. It looks at the different projects around the Southwest and wider across the UK that are actually countering this trend and are demonstrating ways that you can grow your own food, and that right now we can have access to stuff, and people who are defying the trends to actually produce something in their own hands that they can share. So, for example, I don't know if you've heard of the project Street Goat that runs out of Bristol, but Street Goat is a micro dairy cooperative. So it's a collection of people who have got some goats, and they raise those goats on wasteland, and they keep them up in Trooper's Hill, actually. And they take it in turns to do the milking and to do the caring, and then they split the milk and the meats that they get from this. And these kind of little projects are existing around the way, and this is a way of really letting
people know. They make cheese, because I love goat's milk.
They do, yeah, they do. It's a really nice little project, and there are so many. And Bristol's an amazing place to be if you're interested in food sustainability.
Food security, I'd call it, because this is about whether we are, you know, whether we're staring in the face this whole situation of turning up at the supermarket and finding the shelves empty. Yeah. I mean, you know, Brexit is just one thing, but there's all sorts of other things which could mean that our dependency on foreign imports is just not there, you know, that we're not able to keep, we can't keep doing that. We don't want to go to the supermarket and find all the shelves empty. Anyway, the other film is Tell Them We Are Rising. Now, what's that about?
Yeah, so I'm going to try
Bread, is it?
A little bit quicker with these next films because they're all really exciting. Okay. And I want to just very quickly give you an idea of all of them. So Tell Them We Are Rising is one that I'm particularly excited about. It is the UK premiere. Currently, it's the only booked UK viewing of this documentary, which was made in the States just recently. It's called, as you say, Tell Them We Are Rising. It runs on Thursday, the 12th of July. And it is about the history of black colleges and universities in the States. We are very lucky to have been able to get this movie over, and it was by forming a collaboration with Journey to Justice Bristol, who have provided a fund to allow us to pay for the license to screen this film, because we both agreed it's a really important story to tell. So it starts from a point of looking at discrimination and pointed racism, basically apartheid society, from a situation where it was, you know, illegal for you to teach your slave to read, for example, and leading all the way through to the current situation in the States, where black colleges and universities are producing graduates continually and have a large amount of autonomy in terms of how they run. As well as the documentary, we have got Madge Dresser coming down to speak about the history of civil rights from Journey to Justice. She's a professor with a lot of knowledge about civil rights movements. We have other speakers, and we will also be screening a movie called Grade, which was produced in St. Paul's a couple of years ago about the experiences of a young black girl trying to go through college in St. Paul's, to try and really explore how these issues of access to education and discrimination affect people in Bristol today, and what the local situation is like, and what can be done to improve it, and if we do need to improve things, what lessons we can learn from the American model.
No, look, I notice you've also brought in this Save the Bear Pit poster. This, I know, this is something else that PRSC has been involved in under George Ferguson, brought in order to the previous mayor, in order to try and liven the place up. Well, they succeeded in doing that, but it looks like now the city council are starting to dismantle it all.
Yeah, so it turns out that somehow people have got confused about the difference between street art in a neighbourhood and free expression in a neighbourhood, and violence and drug abuse that might be occurring. So there has recently been a rise, or a reported rise, of violence and drug abuse in the Bear Pit, which I would argue is due to a rise of homelessness, the spice epidemic, the massive cuts to social services, and the massive cuts to the police force. But some people seem to have found it easier to say that it's because the People's Republic encourages street art and political expression in the Bear Pit. So as a quick fix, we've been generally kicked out of the space. The whole of the centre of the Bear Pit has been reclaimed and painted flat brown by Bristol Waste. really as an incitement to taggers. I don't think you can walk through there at any time without seeing brand new tags that have turned up in the last 5 minutes. Just before the last bank holiday, on the Friday before the last bank holiday, they demolished the Cube, which PRSC had been curating for several years as the only non-commercial billboard in the city centre that discussed political
ideas. I find it quite interesting that the council picked that to take away, because that is, the like you say, the only non-commercial billboard. The idea being that here is a place for people to almost subvertise, you know, do an advert which is for anti-adverts or against the grain, and that's gone. Now, this does worry me a bit, but anyway, I shouldn't have really even brought that up, because it's another aspect of what People's Republic of Stoke Cross up to.
And we are genuinely shocked about this, the kind of removal of the freedom of expression from the bear pit, and what this says about the priorities that the city has generally. So we are running an event on Wednesday, June the 27th at the Cube Cinema. We're going to have a theatrical performance and a film screening, and afterwards there will be strong discussions about what we do from here and how we move on. So that's at 7:30.
You've been evicted, haven't you?
Yeah, basically we've been evicted. And the question is, does the populace of Bristol want a free, open, creative space that anybody's allowed to get involved with, or would they prefer everything to be locked behind closed doors?
Now, you know what? Money? I wonder if it's got anything to do with the stuff that was actually in the national news back in the Remembrance Days Sunday last year in 2017, where we had Mark Weston, who's the leader of the Conservatives on Bristol City Council, objecting to one of the bits of about the First World War.
Yeah, so believe it or not, that was actually produced, that mural and that full exhibition in the Bear Pit was produced as part of a workshop that was being, that myself and a couple of other members of PRSC ran in partnership with Creative Youth Network and Journey to Justice, celebrating the lives of activists and important political leaders who've been overlooked by history, but who've made an important impact onto Bristol. Now, the words themselves were actually a direct quote from Walter Ailes, who was Bristol MP and pacifist and a campaigner on a lot of different rights for a long time. And the quote was taken from his testimony while he was being court-martialed for being a conscientious objector. And it was his explanation, his own words, explaining why he was refusing to fight. And for this text to have been declared to be offensive because it was the centenary of the war in which so many people died and in which so many people who were conscientious objectors genuinely had the opportunity to stand up and say, this is the moral stance that I'm going to take and these are why these things are wrong. I think debates about the right and wrongs of mass warfare have probably raged quite strongly since that point. And we were there and we put it out, and it was absolutely shocking when it was removed. I would never have anticipated that for a moment.
I wonder whether it didn't go down too well with the Bristol establishment.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see why no one likes to read things that they don't agree with, but whether that should give you the right to remove the message is something that
I love about this city is that there is a culture here of, well, we may not agree with you, but we defend to the death your right to say it. Anyway, so back to the film programme.
Yeah, okay, so extremely quickly, there's only two other movies. We've gone for In Our Hands and Tell Them We Are Rising. The last two are both Bristol premieres. They have been shown elsewhere in the UK before, but we're bringing them to Bristol for the first time. The first one on the Thursday, the 26th of July, is called Can We Do It Ourselves? It's a documentary about economic democracy and about the potentials of the cooperative model. And it was put together by a Swedish media cooperative to address some of the issues that people have raised around the problems with cooperativism. So it's genuinely just a documentary discussing how we want our democracy to work, how we want our economics to work, and what the best way is to organise ourselves in order to try and create economic democracy. And we are very lucky that we are going to have a speaker from the Cable come down, the Cable Media Cooperative, to talk about why they've chosen the cooperative model and how it works for them. And we've also got a speaker from a new group called the Bristol Learning Co-op, who are currently trying to explore the possibilities of creating a cooperative-run university in the UK. And both these people will be coming to discuss their own visions and ideas about cooperativism. And it's really just a chance for everyone to learn more about how these models work and to really accept that this is a whole opportunity.
So much of the business world seems to be about competing, doesn't it? And actually, do you know what? Most of these big companies that say they're competing are quietly working behind the scenes, and they're more like cartels. So maybe the time of the cooperative is coming, because you know, you can see how that model has failed. The competition model has sort of ground to a halt.
Yeah, and as we can see from, you know, you read the news any day and you will find stories of boards that are running companies that are on the brink of going bankrupt, that are firing people left, right and centre, that are telling people that they can't have a pay rise for the next 10 years, then awarding themselves huge pay rises at the top of the chain.
I think Carillion springs to mind, because they all gave themselves massive bonuses, fixed the accounts, and then basically they asset stripped the company, didn't they, as it was going down. I suppose one might say we would do the same if we were in there. If you can see the company that you're in control of is going down, you think, well, maybe I should just take as much from this business as I can, because I know it's going to collapse.
And I'm a liberal of the old school. I believe that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think as long as you've got such a pyramidical kind of a way of managing an organisation, as long as you've got one or two people at the top who have most of the power, who get to make most of the decisions, and who are in a position to turn decisions into their own financial gain, there are very few human beings on the planet who can then become the saints that actually say, no, I'm not going to give myself a second house and a yacht. I'm going to make sure that these people can like pay for their kids to get medicine or whatever it is.
Haven't we created a society that actually rewards people for greed like that and actually propels them up through the system?
I'm not sure how much it's created. I would say that, you know, there is a kind of natural order of, if you're big and strong and you can take it, then you get what you want. And I think it's actually the incredible thing about humanity is that we've actually developed other models for working and ways where we can try and find flattening of the power and a raising up of everybody. And cooperativism is a wonderful example of that, that really has actually a whole other way where everybody takes equal responsibility for what happens in the organization.
Well, it was very widespread, cooperativism, if you can use that word, the cooperatives anyway, in the former Yugoslavia. It was massive amount of cooperatives, massive, I mean, producing big car factories running on a cooperative basis. And then it got smashed by NATO. Anyway,
it's
last
a huge
film?
Number in Spain as well. And then very quickly, the last film will be running on Thursday, the 9th of August. And for those eagle-eared listeners, they will have realised that this means that it's just every other Thursday. This one is called Concrete Soldiers and is about the London housing crisis, the huge number of evictions that have been occurring there over the course of the last few years as housing estate after housing estate after housing estate has had to fight for its right to exist in a world of luxury apartments.
This is what they call social cleansing now, I think. It's a horrible way of putting it. It sounds, you know, like almost like sort of bringing the detergent in to get rid of the rats and the poor people.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people will immediately say that I am bringing the next wave of gentrification into Bristol when I say this. But, you know, I myself am a Londoner who was shocked and priced out of the entire arrangement there and could not conceive of living in such a brutal system where it comes to the monetization of basic human needs. And Bristol, I think, is heading in the same direction. However, I'm also a photographer and I've spent a lot of time actually photographing and visiting some of the evicted estates. And I'm incredibly excited that this film is coming in, because some of the fights, some of the, like, when people have got their backs against the wall, and once again the organization just tries to pick everybody off one at a time and evict you, and then they'll evict you, and then they'll evict you. So each person feels like they're on their own. And these estates across London where people have said, no, we're not going to do that. We're actually going to stand together and say, if you want to take on one of us, you've got to take on all of us. And they've fought, and in a number of estates, they've actually won. So once again, this is, for me, it's a really inspirational story, even though the underlying facts are pretty brutal.
Okay, can you just run through the titles and the dates? One more time.
Yeah, sure. So very quickly, we've got In Our Hands happening on Thursday the 28th of June, Tell Them We Are Rising on Thursday the 12th of July, Can We Do It Ourselves on Thursday the 26th of July, and Concrete Soldiers on Thursday the 9th of August. Plus, not to forget, at the Cube, June 27th, on the Wednesday, we will be running an event, Like It Bent, all about the bear pit and the ways that you can fight back for it.
And I don't know, I mean, if you heard, apparently they may be doing a competition in the Evening Post to decide what might happen to the bear pit.
Oh, well, that'll be fun, won't it? So in which case, I would recommend everybody get involved. And we can also just, you know, if you feel strongly about what should happen to the bear pit, come down to the bear pit and write that on the wall. Right, just take the power into your own hands. Why leave it all to just the taggers?
Lisa Furness from People's Republic of Stokes Croft, which is, you can't miss it, on Jamaica Street. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
So I'm joined by Eddie James from the ARC, which is also a Palestine museum on Broad Street. Now, Eddie, you've got an event coming up where you're really going into in depth, because the BBC won't do it and because the mainstream media in London, the London press, won't do it, into anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. But the thing is, you're also looking at the possibility that it isn't actually an issue. So how can you have a meeting about an issue that might not actually be an issue?
Well, it's simple, because the issue isn't so much the anti-Semitism, but it's about Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn is really disliked about by 90% of the establishment, the middle class and upper class. They see him as a brutal kind of communist type, you know, asset stripper, their assets. But in effect, what he is...
Well, hang on, because they were the asset strippers. Now, this is Keith Joseph in the 1980s. In fact, anyone that wants to know about this, the Mayfair set by Adam Curtis does a brilliant job. I think it's three or four parts in explaining how the Thatcher government asset stripped the whole country. All of the industries were carved up into the high profit-making bits, which were then sold off, and everything that wasn't... It couldn't be making a profit, but if it wasn't a high enough profit, it was just shut down or sold off.
That is a tragedy. Keith Joseph, housing minister for Notting Hill, I remember him well. He was a open door for Rackman in Notting Hill. A terrible man, a disgusting man. But that's the Tory party for you.
So, okay. So, how is this anything to do with asset stripping now? Because I don't think Jeremy Corbyn is an asset stripper. He's almost the opposite. Surely.
Well, that's why. No, he wants to strip their assets. He wants to stop their tax havens.
He can't stop the tax havens.
Well, I think he can. He can bring companies to account. He can change the tax laws. He can make Amazon and all the big companies toe the line. He can stop the, you know, the mergers that are going on. There's lots of stuff. He could asset strip the arms industry.
He can't get at the money in the Channel Islands or in the Cayman Islands or any of the other tax havens, because they're self-governing. They're not actually controlled by him.
No, but what he can do, he can surcharge those that are investing in these offshore companies. I mean, we know where the money's generated, and it'd be no longer possible. I mean, we're leaving Europe. I mean, he'll have ample opportunity to change the ground rules.
I thought it was just the EU we were leaving.
Well, we're not physically, yeah. I correct that, yeah.
Maybe the Americans have got some, you know, sort of propulsion system whereby they're going to drag the whole of the United Kingdom westward across the Atlantic Ocean.
Well, they're going to have to kind of devise a soaring device that keeps Ireland separate and possibly, hopefully, Scotland.
We have to
Scotland.
Go around Ireland. Move Ireland south, move the United Kingdom across, and then move put Ireland back
well,
again.
Well, that would work. That would work. We could move UK closer to America and put Ireland next to where England was.
Okay, well, look, back to this interesting discussion. I think it's fascinating anyway. Corbyn, anti-Semitism and justice for Palestine. So what has this got to do with Palestine? Surely anti-Semitism is about something going on in the Labour Party, which is accused of fueling Jewish conspiracy theories, saying, oh, well, the Jewish people are there to try and control the world. That's what this anti-Semitism scandal's about.
No, I don't think it is. I think what it is the giveaway is the justice for Palestine. Corbyn has always been an advocate for pro-justice for the Palestinians. Come to that for anybody. He's anti-arms and a very kind of good spirit. And I think because he's he's not even pro-Palestinian. He's pro-justice for the Palestinian. And in being so, he's critical of Israel, and that makes him anti-Semitic in their eyes. It's as simple as that. There's no other. But also, he's a danger to the rich. You know, whatever their ethnicity is, he's a danger to them, because some of the money to fund some of his very noble causes is going to come from the rich. You know, there's nowhere else to make it.
But there are currently hundreds, I don't know, maybe even thousands of Labour Party members have been suspended for anti-Semitism and for similar sorts of things. So what's going to happen with that, with those people? I mean, the most obvious is Ken Livingstone, yeah. And he's the former mayor of London, and he was kicked out. I think he was actually kicked out of the Labour Party, wasn't he? He was booted out of the Labour Party, and then he said, well, I'm going to stand for mayor anyway, but as me, not as a Labour Party candidate. And then the Labour Party had to let him come back in.
Yeah, I mean, we got other interesting cases. I was at CLP last week, and
what's that constituency? Labour Party.
Yeah, and they had decided that they were going to suspend a local activist. I won't name her, and on a basis of a potential homophobic. So the Labour Party is really cutting its nose off to spite its face. I mean, but back to the anti-Semitism, it's just a ruse. It's just absolute nonsense. I'm surprised that they get away with it, because there is no rise of anti-Semitism. There's
a serious issue, though. It sounds to me like you're trying to brush this under the carpet. I mean, the Nazis used anti-Semitism to great effect, didn't they? At the end of the First World War, a lot of people blamed, particularly the Zionists, not all Jews, but the Zionists, for the deal that brought the Americans into the First World War.
Yeah.
So there was a real resentment in Germany between the wars against the Jewish people, which Hitler exploited.
Well,
so
yeah, I mean,
that's why I think this is such a serious issue.
Well, I personally don't. I think you've got it out of context there. What happened in the Second World War has nothing to do with Palestine, nothing to do with Corbyn.
Well, it does, because it's when Palestine turned into Israel. Well, the very first people from Europe, the Jews in Europe, came across, didn't they? And actually, many of them became terrorists. They got guns,
right,
and they kicked the British out, effectively.
Well, that's true, but that's a separate issue. I mean, I think the anti-Semitism that we're experiencing now is well and truly just about Corbyn, just about Israel. It's not real anti-Semitism. If you want to look at violence against a minority, a different ethnicity, then look at Islamophobia, because it's rife in the Tory party, it's rife in the media.
Well, have you got any evidence
people,
for that?
Well, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah. We have a Iranian guy that was repeatedly asking the police to protect him, and they murdered him in the most horrific way.
That's Bijami Brahimi.
Yeah. And now the point is that that's just one instance, you know, of Islamophobia and racism, fascism, if you want. That we're not able to control, and secondly, nor is the media able to paint the true picture.
Okay.
And yet, we have cries of anti-Semitism, but very little about, you know, the damage that's been done to the Muslim
community. Well, I mean, some people might say that these are smears. That is, in other words, someone is just saying this, and they have no real intention of ever going through with it because they have no evidence. But those then turn into sort of Chinese whispers. But there's two things particularly concern me about Islamophobia. Let's get onto that one for a minute. One is the Free Tommy movement, which is Tommy Robinson, the founder of the EDL. There's a couple of weeks ago, one Saturday, there was a massive march in London with what they'd say maybe over 10,000 people there to free Tommy Robinson. And listening to the speeches, as I did on YouTube, I could hear almost all of the speakers were Islamophobic speakers. Like, so they were having these speakers openly in London. Then we've also got Baroness Varzi, who's a former chair of the Conservative Party, and she resigned on principle in 2014 over the bombing of Gaza by the Israelis. And now she's saying that Islamophobia is rife to the top, to the bottom of the Conservative Party. Not very much reporting on it, certainly not on the television or the radio much at all.
No, and the thing is, it's not just that, nor is it reported in the media, the general media, our paper, our prints. And that would indicate that they will only talk about anti-Semitism, they won't talk about Islamophobia. Because, in effect, if you look at the truth and you look at the past, you know, utterance from the politicians and the papers that they're printing, you'll see that, in essence, they are racist and they are, you know, stirrers of Islamophobia. In effect, they are the guilty parties, and this is probably why they won't report, you know, Baroness Razi, because she's telling the truth and they're frightened of that.
So do you think that there's it sounds to me like you're saying that there is a conspiracy, there is some sort of Jewish conspiracy in the media to downplay Islamophobia, but really to boost up and propagandise anti-Semitism.
No, I wouldn't say it's a... No, I think, you know, the word Jewish would be the wrong term. I would say it was an establishment type of manoeuvre. I don't think it's a particular class of people. I don't like the idea of classification of people into
What about this whole thing of Jewish identity? Because I know the jazz musician Gilad Atzmon, he's been on this programme, gosh, must be 6 or 8 months ago now. He, even though he's born in Israel, he's Jewish, he actually says, no, I'm not Jewish. And the reason he says that is because it's a religion. And
yeah,
you can't classify it as a race because there's all different races, many different races are Jewish.
Yeah.
So what do you make of this whole thing of Jewish identity? Is it a religion or is it a race?
I'm not sure. What I am sure of is it. We can't actually taint our politics. We can't actually, you know, begrudge the Palestinians of their right of determination. You know, whether it's because of Jewishness or not, we can't afford to do that because we can't turn away from natural justice, the law of the land, and the United Nations. We can't ignore that just because of one particular group of people. Whatever the ethic. Authenticity they are, because the most important thing is that the rule of law, that we are equal in the eyes of the law, and we should actually be protected. So I don't care who anybody is, they have no rights to run roughshod over anybody else.
There is
else.
No international law anymore. It's gone out the window. The United Nations, I mean, really, since 9/11, the Americans just do what they want, the Israelis do what they want, everyone just does what they want.
It's so true what you're saying, Tony, and that's something that we're going to have to discuss. The trouble is, the powers that be know that, but us, the public, the people that vote them in, don't know that. And that's because of the suppression of the truth in the press. So this is something that is so important that wonderful programmers like you actually bring this subject up, because who else is?
Well, don't butter me up. That's terrible. I can't bear being buttered up. But thank you for, I suppose, we do have to talk about this. But you're the one that's actually brought it up, really, in a way, because you're doing this Corbyn Anti-Semitism and Justice for Palestine meeting. Just remind us, when is it taking place and who is going to be there? I'll run through some of the people, but when is it happening?
Okay, it's the 25th of June, Monday, between 7 and 9, and the title is Corbyn Anti-Semitism and Justice for Palestine.
And it's at the Arc.
It's at the Arc, which is 27 Broad Street.
So you've got people involved are Bristol Stop the War, Jewish Voice for Labour. Bristol Stop the War is pretty self-evident, but who is Jewish Voice for Labour? Because there seem to be quite a lot of Jewish Labour Party groups. And I seem to remember beginning of 2017, Al Jazeera releasing a fascinating sting documentary about investigative journalism showing Shai Massot, who was the political attaché at the Israeli embassy, actually offering £1 million to pro-Zionist groups to infiltrate the Labour Party. So one isn't really sure whether a Labour Party Jewish group is there representing ordinary Labour Party Jewish members, or whether it's actually funded as a propaganda exercise and actually a political interference exercise by the Israeli government.
Well, I mean, that certainly applies for the Jewish Labour members, JL, I think what's called, yeah, I think it's JLM.
JVL, Jewish Voice for Labour. Are these the people who are coming to your talk?
Yeah, now Jewish Voice for Labour is a grassroots effort. It's nothing. It's not funded by anybody. I think the Jewish Labour member, I think the guy's in trouble for, you know, I think absconding with some of the funds was given to it, and probably those funds were coming from, you know, the Zionist Party. They're totally discredited, that group, and they're the ones that have been screaming anti-Semitism throughout the Labour
Party. Well, they'll say that the Jewish Voice for Labour has been totally discredited, won't they?
Well, they haven't, because they've not done anything other than speak the truth. They're against the anti-Semitism that's gone, or the accusations of anti-Semitism. In effect, they're a balancing against the, you know, against the use of anti-Semitism as a tool of suppression.
Okay, you've also got a woman called Naomi Wimborne Idrissi. What organisation is she from?
Well, she is a Jewish Voice for Labour.
Oh, okay. And what about Rob Ferguson?
Again, he's against anti-Semitism, Jewish against anti-Semitism. I know very little about him, but obviously he's coming. And,
you know, one of the people that interests me particularly is Alex Kenny, because he's actually just an ordinary teacher. He's from the National Union of Teachers. So you've got a lot of people down there. I suppose the idea really is to get an education in the way that the, I suppose, pre-1987 BBC used to do, whereas you actually used to get both sides.
Every button, yeah.
You know, you get, but the thing is, what I'm saying is, where is the pro-Zionist side? Because none of these speakers are pro-Zionist, are they?
Probably not. It could be that Rob Ferguson might be, but I'd only be guessing. No, they're pretty much all of the same, you know, ilk, so to speak. We also have, the director of PSC, so he's an interesting
Palestine
character.
Solidarity Campaign.
So that would be for the Palestinian. Remember, there's two issues here. There's Corbyn, his political career. There's a call of anti-Semitism to discredit the Labour Party and Corbyn. And then you have the representative of the Palestinians themselves. And that would be, I guess, through the, through PSC.
Palestine Solidarity Campaign. The issue, though, is particularly important, isn't it? I mean, because Britain used to control Palestine up until 1947, 48. I think it was 1947 that the Americans recognised the Jewish state for the first time. And then I think it was followed by the British in 1948 pretty much straight away. But this all used to be British territory.
Oh, yeah, mandated territory, wasn't it?
After Palestine. The First World War. But it was controlled by the Turks and the Ottoman Empire up until the First World War, then it was taken over. The other aspect of all of this is, it's all about religion, it seems to me. A lot of this discussion, whether it's Islamophobia, whether it's anti-Semitism, it's all about your belief and your religion. So is it stretching a point to say, well, the Islamophobia we're seeing now, you know, the Tommy Robinson street protests in London, is a bit like the anti-Semitism that we saw in Nazi Germany?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, it's purely racist with Robinson.
We had Oswald Mosley back in the 1930s, didn't we? We had the street fighters of the fascists
back in
those days.
Yeah.
And there were street fights, there were battles. I wonder, looking at this whole Tommy Robinson business, whether the idea is to actually get street fighting going back again in this country with a similar kind of organisation?
Well, I would think so. I remember Enoch Powell, Rivers of Blood. I mean, this guy was given so much airtime by the BBC, you know, just to promote, you know, almost violence in the street, you know. So, yeah, there are these kind of right-wing fascists that have been, you know, harbouring these desires.
And it's interesting talking about the propaganda side, because there was the propaganda in the 1930s, because Winston Churchill, who was warning about Nazi Germany right from 1934, 1935, 6, 7, 8, 9, until war broke out, he was kept off the airwaves in a similar way to some of the discussions are now being kept off the airwaves about Islamophobia.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But I think most of it is naked racism.
So who's our Winston Churchill for today then? Is there anybody out there who's actually saying what needs to be said despite the propaganda?
To be honest, I don't see Winston Churchill as any great moral pillar. I wouldn't listen to him.
But he was a prophet, wasn't he? Not in the biblical sense, but he was somebody who was pointing, he was saying, right, 1935, he was saying, look, you've got to watch out for these guys. And everyone else was saying, oh, nonsense. And in the meantime, the Nazis were rearming and getting ready for taking over most of Europe.
Well, it was obviously they were gearing themselves up. I mean, it wasn't just Winston Churchill knew that. But, you know,
I can tell you're not a fan of Winston Churchill.
Well, I know. I've got to admit to that. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of people aren't. I mean, he's famous.
He was very racist.
He famously said, history will be kind to me. I know because I will write it.
Which
is one of those, you know, it's a bit arrogant, but, you know, at the end of the day, we now need somebody like that, and we need a country like Britain was in 1939 to take on the fascists. Is anyone going to do that, do you think?
I don't think we've got a problem with the fascists. I think the law can deal with them. 15,000 for Robinson. You know, we think about it. The Iraq war got 2 million people in the street. Come on. If that's all he can raise, 15,000, what have we got to worry? I remember when the fascists came, because I'm a group, you know, a member of the anti-fascist lot in Bristol, and I remember when a few of these idiots turned up here. It was over a planning consent to give, the old Wetherspoon building over to a mosque, and they came down. There was about five of them. It cost us about £1 million to, defend them. And honestly, they got no support. Even the police hate them. And they left with the tail between their legs. There is no problem with fascism, I don't think, in this country.
Hang on, 15,000 people turn up in London. I'm not saying they're all fascists, but there was certainly that Islamophobic and slightly neo-Nazi element to.
Well, it's a bit like UKIP. I mean, who the hell voted for UKIP? You know, only an idiot would be, or a racist. I mean, yeah, he was 14% of the population, which is like 14 million.
That's not just simply insulting, isn't it? To say that the most of the population are either idiots or racists, because there's a very good reason that people did vote for UKIP, and that is because they've seen migrant labour, economic migrant labour, just destroy job prospects, and it's well known. That's one of the main reasons people voted for Brexit, is because they've seen the pay and conditions go through the floor with mass economic migrants.
I don't think that's true for one moment. And I think if you look at the country where most of the migrants are, we had a positive result. We were in a Remain situation. Bristol was 80% Remain. It was when you got into the areas where they didn't even see a migrant. They've never seen a migrant that voted Brexit. Come on. It can't be what they experienced. It can only be the rubbish.
Okay, so let's get into this. This is getting interesting, because actually almost all of the big northern cities which have seen such a destruction after Thatcher of all of their industries, where jobs have been difficult to get, they really resent the idea of people coming in from abroad. In fact, many of the jobs in these cities have been advertised in Eastern Europe, and so people in the local area haven't actually even had the opportunity to apply for those jobs.
Yeah, but most of those jobs are in the big urban areas, not in the... I mean, you know, I think the Bulger case actually summed up what happened to the Northeast, you know what I mean, where children were attacking children. Thatcher was responsible for the ruination of the Northeast and its magnificent industries. There's no question about that. And I think what you got was the vote for Brexit was to leave, you know, the EC, was more about hate of London, at the hate of the politics of this country. I think it was expressed through Brexit, but I don't think the immigrant area had a big say in this, to be quite honest.
So Jeremy Corbyn had a big chance, didn't he, last year in 2017 in a general election to show everyone that he could do it, and he failed. Yes, there was a reduced majority by Theresa May and the Conservatives, who now have to rely on the DUP. But he could have won that. He should have won that election. Why didn't he?
Well, I think two things. One is that the fear of Jeremy Corbyn getting into power is almost tangible. And remember, a third of the Labour Party are kind of Tories in disguise. And so, and if we think of John Mann, who was screaming at Corbyn to say the word Israel, you know, and he's such a gentleman, I would have turned around and say the word Palestine. But again, what was stalking Corbyn?
Hang on, because you've just said that a third of the Labour Party are right wing. I mean, what about our local MPs here? Thangam Debonair, we've got Karen Smith, Kerry McCarthy. Are they, what side are they on? Are they Conservatives?
Well, I mean, certainly Thangam Debonair. I mean, what she did to Corbyn was disgraceful. But you asked the question, why did we lose? Why did Labour lose? Simply because they were screaming anti-Semitism. They were screaming that he was the wrong leader. Not the Tories. It was the Labour. The third Labour Party. Then we had that false kind of like, you know, stalking horse. What was his name?
Owen Smith.
You know, what a disgrace to any party.
That was interesting, wasn't it? Because he was saying all the same sort of stuff as Corbyn. It's just he didn't mean it.
Well, the guy worked for 5 years as a lobbyist for the chemical companies, which take 10% of our national health budget. 10%. You know what I mean? You know, this guy was a traitor to everything. So the reason we lost was a lot of the infighting from the Labour itself, and that I can't understand. You know, where is the party loyalty if you're going to have a party? And to get
the thing is, it was all finished by that point. I mean, it was another major problem for Corbyn was the press calling him a terrorist.
There was also
a lot of bomb attacks going off. I think it was three terrorist attacks in the run-up, which announced all stopped. So I wonder whether these terrorist attacks have got something to do with there being an election and who's actually behind them.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there is strange things going on, but that's maybe for
is
another.
That the deep
that,
state?
That was
is
for
it
another.
The deep state
that would
doing
be
this?
For another program.
But anyway, so at that point, there were several terrorist attacks. There was the Westminster Bridge, there was London Bridge, there was Manchester, and all of a sudden, all these links apparently between Jeremy Corbyn and the IRA.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's such nonsense. You know what I mean? Really, it's such. I don't think that we've had such a chance to have a magnificent mind in control of this country. I think it's a wonderful opportunity.
Well, some people say that we haven't had a real Labour Party leader since Harold Wilson stepped down in 1976. And he didn't really step down. He was bullied out.
He was kicked
out because MI5 were bugging and burgling all of him and his cabinet. And the army and the crown were starting to talk about a coup, actually a military coup to get rid of him.
Yeah, no, he was. I agree with you. I think maybe Smith would have been a good leader.
John Smith.
Yeah, but he unfortunately died. I mean, as a lot of the Labour.
Well, just after going to the Bilderberg conference, he died. And just after announcing in Athens that he wanted to get rid of the IMF.
Well, both good causes.
Bizarre, isn't it? I mean, you know, and then of course, who should pop up? Tony Blair.
Yeah, Tony Blair.
So just remind us where and when this discussion, Corbyn, anti-Semitism and justice for Palestine, is taking place, Eddie.
Okay. It's the 25th of June, 7 till 9, and it's at 27 Broad Street, BS1 2HG. It'll be a lovely event, very, very much needed. I mean, what we need people of importance, people of power, to get together and talk about this for the sake of humanity, not for party politics, just for the sake of humanity.
Is Baroness Varsi coming?
No, we haven't invited.
Oh, right, well, I'm going to email her and see if she can.
That would be wonderful.
Anyway, Eddie, lovely to have you on Dialect again.
No, it's been really nice. Thank you.
Just a final reminder, it's Corbyn, Anti-Semitism and Justice for Palestine. It's on at the Arc on Broad Street, Monday the 25th of June from 7 till 9. That's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. Subscribe and listen the week before broadcast if you like at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Lisa Furness from the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, or PRSC for short, and also to Eddie Clark from the Palestine Museum and the ARC Project on Broad Street. Also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street. They're online at prsc.org.uk. You can talk to the PRSC office on 0117 909 6897 or the China Shop on 944 4540. Volunteer with us if you like, or for hundreds of opportunities across Britain via the National Volunteering website. That's do-it.org. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. I'll be back on Friday with my two-hour BCFM politics show, live from 6 till 8 p.m. But meanwhile, thanks for listening. Till the same time next week here, goodbye for now.
Never found. Bye-bye.